Imagine it is 2030. You didn't buy the shoes you're wearing right now.
Right.
You didn't book the vacation you're taking next week. You didn't even like click add to cart on the groceries sitting on your porch.
A piece of software did all of it.
Exactly. A piece of software did it for you. And it didn't just automate a list. It actively negotiated with a server sitting in a closet 3,000 miles away.
Yeah, in a fraction of a second.
Settling the payment before you even blinked. So that is the future we are staring down today in this deep dive.
It really is.
We are unpacking a massive stack of highly confidential strategic reports, market analyses, and infrastructure blueprints. And they detail something called the sovereign agentic economy.
Which is just a profound transition. I mean, we are rapidly moving away from a world where humans click buttons on a glowing rectangle.
Right, the old way.
Yeah, and entering this era where machines negotiate directly with other machines on our behalf. But there's a massive catch that gets overlooked.
Always a catch.
Always. The physical infrastructure required to support that shift, like the actual metal, silicon, and memory, it's facing a severe crisis of capacity.
Because you can't run these massive autonomous AI brains out in the real world without breaking how computers have been built for the last 50 years.
Precisely. The physics just don't allow it.
And that is our mission for this deep dive. Whether you're trying to figure out how e-commerce will look in a few years, or, you know, you're an IT engineer wondering how to run heavy AI models without spending millions on idle GPUs.
Which is a huge problem right now.
Huge problem. This deep dive is going to give you that ultimate aha moment. So we're figuring out how software agents will take over your wallet and then how physical servers are overcoming their limits to make it happen.
Yeah, specifically looking at a revolutionary technology called Cove Software-Defined Memory.
Or SDM.
Right, SDM, which is being deployed by an infrastructure firm called Dureticular.
Okay, let's just jump straight into the deep end of the software layer. The sources say the click and buy era is basically dead.
It is dead.
But what does that actually mean for you, the average person?
Well, it means the fundamental nature of a transaction is undergoing this massive structural paradigm shift. Think about legacy commerce, human-centric commerce.
Like going to a website.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You, the human, open a web browser. You type in a search term. You scroll through visually appealing pictures.
You read reviews to see if it's legit.
Right. You gauge trust. Then you manually add an item to a cart. Then you physically type in a 16-digit credit card number.
It's exhausting when you actually say it all out loud.
It is. And that entire flow was designed around human psychology and human limitations. But what these reports detail is the transition to agentic commerce.
A commerce, yeah.
AI agents aren't just customer service chatbots anymore reading scripts to answer FAQs. They are autonomous economic proxies.
Autonomous economic proxies. I mean, that sounds like a very fancy way of saying a smart personal assistant.
It's much more than that.
Well, the scale in these documents is just staggering. The projections suggest that by 2030, agent-mediated transactions will influence between $3 trillion and $5 trillion globally.
Trillion with a T.
Trillion. That represents roughly 15 to 25% of all global e-commerce.
It's a massive chunk of the economy.
And in the U.S. market alone, we're looking at $1 trillion in agent-influenced retail revenue. This isn't some fringe futuristic concept. This is the new foundation.
And because of that scale, you know, it completely upends the traditional balance of power.
Between the buyer and the seller.
Exactly. In legacy e-commerce, the merchant holds all the leverage. They control the marketing funnel.
Right.
They use visual design. They use SEO.
Search engine optimization.
Yeah, to game Google's algorithms.
Yeah.
And they rely on emotional brand storytelling to slowly guide you toward a checkout button.
But an AI agent doesn't care about a compelling brand narrative.
Not at all. It cannot feel nostalgia looking at a beautifully shot commercial of a family at the beach.
It just wants the data.
Purely structured data, verified mathematical specifications, and strict utility based on its human owner's parameters.
Wait, so if an AI isn't going to buy a sweater because, like, the model looking into the sunset makes it feel a certain way, how does it decide?
Mathematically.
It just looks at the fabric blend, the price, and the shipping time.
Yes.
It sounds like trying to sell a sports car to a spreadsheet.
That's a great way to put it.
Does this mean the golden age of digital marketing is just over?
The golden age of human-targeted digital marketing is certainly facing an extinction event. I mean, merchants have to completely abandon SEO in favor of what the industry is calling GEO.
Generative engine optimization.
Exactly. Let's look at the mechanics of this. If a transaction originates directly within a conversational AI interface,
like ChatGPT or Claude,
or Gemini, or a highly specialized travel bot. That AI needs to be able to instantly read a merchant's entire inventory.
So the website is basically useless.
To the machine, yes. Merchants must structure their inventory data using machine-readable catalogs. They utilize specific, rigid metadata schemas.
Like schema.org or the GS1 standard.
Precisely. If an AI agent pings a merchant server, and it cannot seamlessly parse a product's metadata, the technical specs, the real-time availability,
and the dynamic pricing via an API.
Right. If it can't read all that instantly, that product effectively does not exist in the marketplace.
Wow.
The AI will simply move on to the next merchant in milliseconds. It doesn't matter how beautiful the website is.
Which brings us to a concept in the reports that I found, frankly, terrifying from a business perspective.
Visibility gap.
The visibility gap. Just the name sounds ominous. It implies a total blackout.
Because it is a blackout. Think about it. For the last 20 years, companies have spent billions building tracking infrastructure.
And keys. Pixels. Heat maps.
Yeah. To monitor every single micro-interaction a human makes on a website. Clicks. Time on page. Session duration.
Referral depth.
Exactly. The visibility gap means all of those traditional marketing metrics are rendered obsolete overnight.
Because the agent is doing the shopping in the dark, essentially.
Yes. The AI agent performs the entire browsing phase locally on your device or inside the isolated environment of the LLM.
So if I tell my AI, you know, find me a waterproof hiking boot under $150 that can be delivered by Thursday.
The AI goes out and silently queries thousands of merchant APIs in the background. It does the comparative shopping mathematically.
And the merchant is totally blind to this.
Totally blind. They do not see the browsing. They only observe the final API-driven add-to-cart event.
The entire top and middle of the sales funnel becomes invisible.
You just get the final binary result, yes or no.
That has to send a chill down the spine of every digital marketer alive. You lose all that granular behavioral data.
It's a huge loss of intel.
But reading further into the sources, there is a pretty massive silver lining for sellers here, isn't there? The conversion rates.
Oh, they change drastically. And this is the saving grace for the retail industry. While merchants lose browsing visibility, early data shows a phenomenal upside.
Right.
Shoppers using AI agents convert at 4 times the rate of traditional human shoppers.
4 times?
A 400% increase.
That is an insane metric. Why is it so much higher? Is it just because the machine is faster?
No. It's because by the time the buyer's agent actually contacts the seller's API to initiate a checkout, the intent is perfectly pre-qualified.
Mathematically pre-qualified.
Exactly. Think about human shopping. You browse, you get distracted by a text message.
You open a new tab.
You add something to a cart but abandon it because shipping was $5 higher than you expected.
Or you just decide to think about it for a few days. We're indecisive.
Inherently indecisive. Yeah. But an AI agent already knows your absolute maximum budget, your exact criteria, your size, your color preferences.
There is no idle window shopping.
None. The machine only engages the merchant's checkout API when it has solved the equation and is ready to execute immediately.
Okay, hold on. This all sounds incredibly efficient, but I have to put my skeptic's hat on here.
Sure.
If these software agents are making purchasing decisions and executing transactions entirely in the background, how do we prevent them from just draining our bank account?
That is the big question.
I mean, if my laptop gets malware or my AI gets confused by a bad prompt, does a hacker just get unlimited access to my life savings?
Yeah.
We have to talk about the financial rails of e-commerce.
It's a massive security nightmare if done wrong.
Exactly. Moving from how they shop to how they actually pay.
Your skepticism is warranted. It's the exact problem the financial sector is scrambling to solve right now.
Because legacy payment gateways were designed for humans.
Right. When we buy something online, we use CAPECJs, SMS two-factor authentication, or face scans on our phones.
To prove we're a real human.
But AI agents can't solve visual CAPECJs by design. And they don't have smartphones to get a 6-digit text message.
Right. So for autonomous software to exchange value safely, the industry is building a specialized machine-native trust stack. And the foundational layer of that stack is a new identity standard called Know Your Agent, or KYA.
KYA. Because traditional KYC...
Do Your Customer, where you upload your passport.
...is way too slow and cumbersome for machines executing thousands of network actions a second.
So how does KYA actually work mechanically?
It establishes a cryptographically secure chain of trust. It doesn't replace human KYC. It acts as an extension of it.
Okay.
It happens in 3 phases. First, the human or organization, the principal, undergoes traditional KYC. you verify your physical identity and bank accounts.
It's just like normal.
Right. Second, once you are verified, your personal AI agent is issued a digital agent passport.
A digital agent passport.
It's a tamper-proof, blockchain-anchored credential. It states the agent's origin code, its license, and critically, who owns it.
And finally, the financial platforms bind that unique ID to your verified bank account.
Cryptographically bind it, yes.
So the machine is basically carrying around a digital proxy driver's license that says, I am an authorized piece of software, and I belong to this specific vetted human.
Exactly. Using protocols like decentralized identifiers, DIDs, and verifiable credentials, the agent can cryptographically sign transactions.
Which proves to the merchant that the agent has authority to spend, but without ever exposing the user's actual personal details.
Exactly. No name or address exposed. And to ensure the agent hasn't been hacked by malware, as you feared, these agents run in secure hardware enclaves.
The reports called them Trusted Execution Environments, or TEEs.
TEEs, yes.
Unpack a TEE for me. How does a hardware enclave stop a software hack?
A TEE is an isolated, highly secure area on the main processor itself. It guarantees that the code and data inside are protected.
So even if the main operating system of your device is deeply compromised by a virus,
the malware cannot peek inside the TEE. It provides a mathematical proof and attestation to the payment network that the agent's code is pristine.
It hasn't been tampered with to bypass spending limits.
Right.
Okay, that makes me feel a bit better. But even with a verified identity in a secure vault, handing a machine my actual credit card number feels reckless.
It would be.
The reports detail a mechanism called shared payment tokens, or SPTs. Are these basically just virtual burner cards?
They are far more sophisticated than a standard virtual card. SPTs operate on the cybersecurity principle of least privilege.
Meaning they only get exactly what they need.
Right. Instead of the agent holding your actual credit card number, which could be disastrous, the financial network generates a narrowly scoped credential.
And this token is restricted across multiple dimensions simultaneously.
It's locked to a specific merchant's API. It has a strictly limited time window, often measured in minutes, and it's bound to a narrow price range.
I love this concept. It's like giving a teenager a prepaid debit card, but one that only works at a specific bookstore for exactly the cost of a biology textbook, and the card physically self-destructs in 20 minutes.
That is the perfect analogy.
It's not a blank check. It's a hyper-specific financial mandate.
The industry term for this is delegated consent. You set explicit boundaries or guardrails within your wallet interface.
So I might tell the agent, purchase any direct flight to London departing Friday as long as it is under $600.
And the agent uses the Agent Payments Protocol, AP2, to provide cryptographic proof to the network that it has that exact mandate.
And if it tries to go rogue?
If it attempts a transaction outside that budget or tries to buy a hotel instead of a flight, automated security protocols called kill switches instantly freeze the wallet.
Rejecting the transaction at the network level.
Instantly.
And all this complex cryptography has to happen incredibly fast. The sources note that human checkout flows can take 2 to 3 seconds to clear through Visa or MasterCard.
Which is an eternity for a machine.
Right. But these agent transactions are optimized for sub-150 millisecond authorization. How are they achieving that speed with all this extra math?
Because machines operate at a different velocity. And they are bypassing legacy banking rails entirely. This velocity is powered by a new alphabet soup of open source protocols forming the machine web.
We mentioned AP2 for financial execution.
Right. But there's also the Agentic Commerce Protocol, ACP. That handles the actual transaction layer communication inside the AI environment.
And UCP, the Universal Commerce Protocol, which synchronizes the merchant's inventory for discovery.
Acting as the catalog standard.
And then there's the BY402 protocol. This one genuinely blew my mind.
It's fascinating.
It's designed for a subset machine-to-machine micropayments. We're talking about settling transactions of a fraction of a cent, a tenth of a penny.
Row 3U01.
Humans obviously don't transact in fractions of a penny. If I try to swipe my credit card for a tenth of a cent, the processing fee alone would be 30 cents.
Exactly.
Why on earth do machines need to send each other a tenth of a cent?
Because machines consume resources in micro increments. When an AI agent needs to query a database, rent a sliver of computing power, or access an API endpoint,
it incurs a tiny cost.
A tiny cost. Huh? Traditional payment gateways fail completely here due to those flat fee structures.
So how does BY402 fix it?
The BY402 protocol utilizes blockchain-based state channels. It allows two machines to open a direct cryptographically secured ledger between themselves.
So they just keep a running tab.
Exactly. They stream thousands of microtransactions back and forth as they consume data or compute power, and then roll up the final net balance into a single settlement transaction on the main blockchain.
It's the only mathematical way to facilitate high-frequency, sub-cent machine economies without drowning in transaction fees.
You'd go bankrupt on fees otherwise.
That is wild. And naturally, because there are trillions of dollars at stake, this massive shift has triggered an all-out corporate battle for dominance over these new financial rails.
A huge battle.
The reports highlight a massive strategic divergence between two giants, Stripe and PayPal. They are essentially carving up the future of commerce in real time.
It's a fascinating case study in strategic positioning. Stripe is taking what we can call a developer-first infrastructure approach.
Right.
Stripe's Agentic Commerce Suite is API-heavy, highly modular, and designed for engineers. They are focusing heavily on B2B commerce.
Software as a service, infrastructure procurement.
Exactly.
So they want to be the hidden plumbing. When my AI agent needs to autonomously negotiate and buy 50 gigabytes of cloud storage from AWS, or rent a cluster of GPUs to train a model, Stripe wants to process that machine-to-machine exchange.
That's their goal. They use a feature called Stripe Projects for Agents,
which allows developers to easily give their software agents scoped identities and restricted API keys.
It's very programmatic. And currently, their settlement layer primarily relies on traditional digitized fiat currency rails.
Using tools like Stripe Treasury and automated card issuing, they are building the engine room for the developers.
But PayPal is taking the completely opposite route.
Yeah, they're going straight to the consumer.
Leveraging their massive two-sided trust network, they already have over 400 million active consumer wallets.
And 35 million merchants globally. They don't want to be the hidden plumbing, they want to be the front door.
Exactly. PayPal's strategy is entirely focused on integrating discovery and payment into a single, seamless flow for retail and travel.
They're aggressively pushing a framework called StoreSync.
Right. StoreSync is designed to push merchant product databases, all that structured metadata we discussed earlier, directly into massive LLM environments.
Like Perplexity, Claude, or Gemini.
So if you're in Perplexity asking for the best running shoes,
PayPal is the bridge feeding Perplexity the live inventory data from Nike's servers?
Precisely. It turns static websites into dynamic, structured, machine-readable datasets that AIs can instantly digest.
And crucially, while they obviously support fiat currency, PayPal is heavily utilizing their native stablecoin for these agent flows.
TYUSD.
Right, because TYUSD lives on a blockchain. It allows for programmable money.
An agent can execute a payment with complex, self-executing smart contract logic built right into the token,
facilitating those rapid on-chain machine settlements far more efficiently than routing through legacy banking systems.
It's just a completely different approach from Stripe.
Okay, so we have a clear picture of the software layer. Stripe powers back-end infrastructure. PayPal powers your personal AI booking a vacation.
Right.
But booking a vacation or buying software is still largely digital. It's moving bits around.
Yes.
E-commerce isn't just about buying digital goods. It is about machines paying machines to move physical objects in the real world.
This is where it gets kinetic.
Exactly. This brings us to a massive pivot in our deep dive, kinetic commerce and how AI actually hits the physical world.
This is where the concepts leap off the screen and become tangible.
The Dereticular Infrastructure Reports highlight a specific and somewhat surprising case study in the smart hospitality sector.
The $11 billion RV park industry.
Which sounds so mundane, but it's actually the perfect crucible for testing decentralized physical AI infrastructure under extreme conditions.
It really is.
I love this example because it's so grounded. We aren't talking about hovering cars, we're talking about Winnebagos. So paint the picture for us. How does a rural RV park become a high-tech hub for autonomous agents?
Let's walk through the exact kinetic flow. Imagine a rural RV park miles away from a major city.
Middle of nowhere.
Right. A consumer's personal AI agent, which the reports call Flay, is tasked by its human owner with finding a spot for the weekend that has high-speed internet and specific utility hookups.
Okay.
Flay uses PayPal's StoreSync, or parses schema.org metadata, to discover the park's real-time site availability.
Flay then initiates a direct negotiation with the RV park's local on-site server.
Right. Dereticular calls this local edge server a sovereign sentry.
So my phone's AI is talking directly to a server sitting in a dusty utility closet at the Argy Park, haggling over a parking spot and verifying the power output.
Exactly. Flake communicates with the Sentry using the Agentic Commerce Protocol and an agent-to-agent, or A2A, handshake.
The Sovereign Sentry server verifies its local database, confirms that a 50-amp pull-through site is indeed available.
And returns a cryptographic cart mandate to Flake.
Then the financial settlement happens instantly.
Because these are autonomous agents, they can't be redirected to a web page to type in a password for a credit card. Instead, the buyer's agent utilizes the BY402 protocol we discussed to execute a direct on-chain transfer of USDC or PYUSD stablecoins.
The transaction settles in seconds with cryptographic finality for fractions of a penny.
Yes.
Okay, so the digital handshake is done, the stablecoins have changed hands, but here is the kinetic part. The money is in the bank, but the gate is still locked.
Right.
How does the physical world react to this software negotiation?
Well, once the stablecoin settlement clears the blockchain and is verified by the Sovereign Sentry, the Sentry issues a localized encrypted command
To a physical hardware module on the ground.
known as the industrial foreman.
The industrial foreman, that sounds like a heavy piece of machinery.
It is essentially an advanced automated Internet of Things execution layer. It translates digital commands into physical actions via relays and actuators.
So when the guest physically arrives at the park, their vehicle or phone presents the verified time-stamped digital token.
And the industrial foreman validates the token and physically triggers the motor to unlock and open the entry gate.
But it doesn't stop there.
No, it routes the guests to their specific site and activates the 50-amp electrical breaker specifically for that hookup.
It turns on the specific municipal water valve for that site.
Exactly.
And the reports say it even tracks the utility billing dynamically, right? IoT meters track the exact electricity and water consumption by the milliliter and the kilowatt hour.
Then, local AI agents adjust the dynamic pricing based on grid demand.
And calculate the final bill autonomously when the RV leaves. The human just drives in and drives out. It is totally seamless.
But there is a massive catch to this RV park scenario.
Ah, the infrastructure reports highlight it as a critical vulnerability. They call it the off-grid imperative.
Yes, rural RV parks, farms, and industrial sites, by definition, often have terrible, inconsistent internet connectivity.
They are at the end of the line for telecom infrastructure.
Exactly. They cannot rely on centralized hyperscale cloud services like AWS or Google Cloud to process the AI inference required to open a physical gate.
Or run security cameras or turn on the water.
Right. If a backhoe cuts a fiber optic line three towns over, or a storm knocks out a cell tower, the RV park cannot simply cease to function.
The guests still need power and water.
The engineers in the documents call this island mode.
Island mode.
It's the operational state where localized hardware and software continue to run completely autonomously.
Without relying on the cloud.
The intelligence, the complex reservation ledger, the AI vision models tracking vehicles, the stablecoin verification, it must all live and execute locally on edge hardware.
Right there in that Sovereign Sentry server closet.
Yes.
Okay, so let's pause and think about the reality of that. If the brain has to live locally in a metal box next to a dirt road, that box has to be incredibly powerful.
You can't just run an advanced AI model on a cheap router.
The math requires serious compute.
And that is the exact physical bottleneck the entire industry is currently slamming into.
If autonomous kinetic hubs require local edge servers to process complex AI tasks to maintain island mode, we have to look at the harsh realities of hardware physics.
Which brings us to the severe limitations of traditional edge computing.
Let's break down the spectrum of edge hardware outlined in the dirreticular sources. On the lightweight end, they deploy what they call the mobile edge or the nomad fleet.
These are tiny form factor machines.
Running on things like Raspberry Pi 5s or Intel N100 mini PCs, they draw very little power, which is fantastic for solar-powered setups out in a field.
But they have severe physical limits.
The primary unforgiving limit is memory. RAM, random access memory.
The infrastructure reports describe this as one of the fundamental grand challenges of computer science.
Because historically, RAM is physically bolted to the motherboard.
It is directly physically tied to the CPU via copper traces. If you deploy an edge server that has 16 gigabytes of RAM soldered onto its board, that is an absolute hard physical limit.
You cannot magically download more RAM.
No, you cannot.
And we know that modern AI models are notoriously memory hungry. The reports mention specific models like hemp-grade AI,
which uses complex computer vision to analyze agricultural crop quality in real time.
or spectral provenance for high-end security authentication. What actually happens mechanically if a local edge server with 16 gigs of RAM tries to load one of these massive AI models and it runs out of space?
It results in a catastrophic system failure state.
Ooh.
When a CPU asks for data that doesn't fit in the physical RAM, the operating system has two terrible choices.
Okay.
First, it can simply crash, triggering a hard out-of-memory error.
Instantly killing the AI process and likely taking the whole system down with it.
Or second, the system will attempt to use a process called paging or swapping. It will try to take data from the RAM and temporarily route it to a local disk drive, like an SSD, to free up space.
But an SSD is for long-term storage. It isn't designed to feed the CPU in real time.
Exactly. Even the fastest solid-state drive is orders of magnitude slower than RAM, often thousands of times slower.
So when a system starts aggressively swapping memory to a disk, what happens?
It's called thrashing. System grinds to an absolute halt. An AI inference task that should take 200 milliseconds suddenly takes 3 minutes.
Or the connection simply times out.
And in a kinetic environment, like a heavy steel gate waiting to open for a vehicle or a security camera tracking an intruder in real time, that kind of latency is completely unacceptable.
And potentially dangerous.
Very dangerous.
So the obvious question any business owner might ask is, why not just brute force the problem? Why not just add more RAM to the edge nodes?
It's not that simple.
Or better yet, just buy localized servers packed with massive GPUs that have huge amounts of video RAM or VRAM built right in. Dereticular does build these bigger, beefier tier 3 AI core containers, right? Why not put one everywhere?
They do build them, but putting massive GPUs with huge memory pools in every single localized edge node is economically unviable.
And highly inefficient.
The reports point out a critical flaw in industrial cluster design. If you buy a server packed with huge memory specifically to handle rare peak AI loads, that memory sits completely idle 90% of the time.
You're paying massive upfront capital expenditures for premium hardware that literally does nothing most of the day.
Just so the system doesn't crash during a 10-second AI vision task when a truck rolls through the gate.
It's like buying a massive 18-wheeler semi-truck just because once a year you know you need to move a heavy couch.
Right.
And the rest of the year you are driving that 18-wheeler to the grocery store to buy milk.
The capital expenditure makes absolutely no sense.
You want a small, efficient car for the daily groceries, but you absolutely need the 18-wheeler's capacity for those rare, heavy jobs.
That analogy hits the nail on the head. This inefficiency raises one of the most important questions in modern infrastructure design.
If we cannot afford to put massive RAM in every single box at the edge, what if those boxes could somehow dynamically share the memory they already have?
And that question leads us to the absolute breakthrough of this deep dive.
The introduction of COVE SDM, the Industrial Memory Engine. This is where the computer science gets genuinely mind-blowing and, frankly, sounds a bit like science fiction.
It does sound impossible, but it is very real. COVE is a highly specialized high-performance computing firm based in Chicago.
And they've solved this grand challenge with software-defined memory, or SDM.
Yes. Dereticular is integrating this deeply into their larger stationary nodes to solve the memory bottleneck.
Okay, we need to go deep on this. Break down how COVE actually works, because telling me you can decouple memory from a CPU sounds like you are breaking the fundamental laws of physics.
It does, doesn't it?
The CPU expects the memory to be millimeters away on the motherboard. How do you trick it?
It's a profound, incredibly complex software virtualization layer. COVE completely decouples memory from the CPU.
Through their proprietary software, it allows a cluster of entirely separate physical servers to treat their collective individual physical RAM as a single unified liquid pool.
A liquid pool of memory.
I love that visual. So it's like taking all the small puddles of RAM across 50 servers and combining them into a massive lake that any single server can drink from.
Exactly. The performance statistics documented in the sources are jaw-dropping.
Imagine you have a basic, cheap edge server with only 64 gigabytes of physical RAM.
Suddenly, a massive, unpredicted, heavy AI job arrives on the network that requires 500 gigabytes of RAM to execute.
Normally, as we discuss, catastrophic crash or endless thrashing.
But with COVE SDM active on a network, that tiny 64 gigabyte server can instantly, dynamically borrow nearly a terabyte of RAM from the liquid network pool.
Execute the massive AI job entirely in memory without ever touching a slow disk drive.
And then return that borrowed memory to the pool nanoseconds later.
Nanoseconds. It borrows the RAM over a network cable, crushes the AI task, and puts it back. That is incredible.
It's a total game changer.
And I want to pause here for you listening, because it is easy to assume this is just some startup's inflated marketing claim or vaporware.
It's not.
The sources explicitly note Co's legitimacy is deeply battle-tested in the highest courts. They recently won a massive $525 million patent verdict against Amazon Web Services.
Against AWS.
We have to unpack that, because you don't beat AWS in court over cloud infrastructure unless you have invented something truly foundational. What exactly was the lawsuit about?
The lawsuit provides the perfect context for why Co's technology is so revolutionary.
Right.
In the early days of cloud computing, Amazon's EC2, Elastic Compute Cloud, faced the exact same physical constraints we just discussed.
They were renting out virtual machines, but those machines were rigidly tied to the physical RAM bolted inside the specific server rack.
It was highly inefficient and limited scalability. Cove had developed and patented the foundational tracking algorithms and the architectural IP that allowed a system to pool memory across a network dynamically without confusing the CPU.
So Cove figured out how to trick the operating system into thinking network memory was local memory, which is the holy grail for a cloud provider.
Yes. The jury found that AWS had infringed on Cove's foundational patents to build out their hyperscalable cloud infrastructure.
That $500 million verdict legally and technically validates that Cove owns the foundational intellectual property for this kind of hyperscalable, software-defined memory pooling.
They literally wrote the blueprint for how modern cloud memory operates.
Okay, so the technology is beyond proven. However, the laws of physics still apply, and the dearticular infrastructure blueprints are very clear about the technical hurdles.
Cove is not just a magic wand. You can wave over everything.
Specifically, they talk about the networking requirements. Cove requires a massive high-speed data plane to function.
Yes, it does.
The documents split this into a control plane and a data plane. Can you break down the difference, perhaps with an analogy?
Certainly. Think of a busy airport. The control plane is the air traffic controller sitting in the tower.
Okay.
They don't move any luggage or passengers. They just send small critical signals telling the planes where to go, coordinating the flow.
In networking, the control plane can run on standard Ethernet using basic TCP/IP protocols because it's just sending lightweight instructions.
But the data plane, however, represents the actual massive cargo planes moving thousands of tons of freight. This is the heavy lifting.
Right.
In Cove's system, the data plane, the actual transfer of gigabytes of memory across the network in real time, absolutely requires a specialized protocol.
Called RDMA, or Remote Direct Memory Access?
Yes.
Okay. Explain RDMA for the non-engineers. Why can't we just send the memory over a normal network connection like a downloaded file?
Because of the CPU bottleneck. Normally, when data moves between computers over standard Ethernet, the CPU on both ends has to get involved.
The sending CPU packages the data, and the receiving CPU unpacks it, processes the network protocols, and writes it to memory.
That processing overhead introduces latency, delay. RDMA is brilliant because it allows the network card to bypass the CPU entirely.
It acts like a dedicated bypass lane on a highway.
The network interface card reads or writes data directly into the memory of the remote computer, completely ignoring the CPU.
So the CPU doesn't even know the network card is shuffling things around in its RAM. It just looks for the data and it's magically there.
Exactly. But to do this at the blistering speed Cove requires to mimic local RAM, you cannot use cheap, off-the-shelf networking gear.
You need specialized, enterprise-grade network interface cards that support advanced protocols.
Like ROCv2, which stands for RDMA over Converged Ethernet, or InfiniBand hardware.
Okay, this is where the puzzle pieces start fitting together, and it leads to a huge realization.
What's that?
If Cove SDM is so magical, why aren't we putting it on those little Raspberry Pis or Intel N100s at the edge gates in the RV park? If they have a memory problem, why not just pool their tiny memory together?
That is the exact crucial limitation dearticular's engineers identified in their deployment blueprints.
Mobile edge devices like a Raspberry Pi lack those specialized, expensive RDMA-capable network interface cards. Their hardware simply cannot do it.
Now, you can try to emulate RDMA and software over a standard 1 gigabit Ethernet connection, a process known as SoftRoS-E.
But the documents explicitly state that using SoftRoS-E emulation introduces over 10 microseconds of latency into the memory transfer.
10 microseconds.
To a human, 10 millionths of a second is less than a blink of an eye. It's nothing.
But to a high-performance CPU expecting data from physical RAM in a handful of nanoseconds, 10 microseconds is an absolute eternity.
It's the equivalent of a human asking a colleague a question and having to wait 3 weeks for the answer.
At that latency, the illusion breaks. The liquid memory over the standard network becomes slower than just swapping the data to a local solid-state disk.
Therefore, the internal engineering verdict is strict and uncompromising. Cove is strictly for big iron, not edge silicon.
Big iron.
Heavy, powerful, stationary servers. So that brings us to the final piece of the architectural puzzle.
Creating what the reports call the sovereign core.
Where heavy industry actually meets AI in the field. How is DeRticular actually using Cove if they can't put it on the tiny edge devices out at the gate?
They're building what they conceptualize as a data center in a box.
While Cove isn't for the lightweight nomad fleet of sensors and gate openers, it is the perfect fit.
It is the missing industrial engine.
For DeRticular's larger stationary anchor nodes, these are the Tier 2 hubs and Tier 3 AI cores, heavily armored server racks deployed in challenging environments.
Like the Node 4 set up in Uganda.
Yeah.
Or their high-security Privada vaults.
Let's look closely at those real-world applications from the reports, because this is where the theory hits the dirt. First, the hemp-grade AI training at Node 4 in Uganda.
Right.
We talked about how analyzing crop quality with computer vision takes heavy processing. If an agricultural facility wants to retrain its AI model locally to recognize a new crop disease, that normally requires massive compute.
Instead of buying wildly expensive NVIDIA GPUs with massive VRAM and shipping them to rural Uganda just to retrain the AI model once a month,
DeRticular uses Cove to pool cheap, standard system RAM from all the other idle servers in the local cluster.
Let's say there are 10 servers running basic farm logistics. Cove pools their unused RAM.
The entire massive AI model with all its complex neural weights can load into this pooled memory instantly.
The training job executes, and the memory is released back to the logistics servers.
It eliminates the need for exorbitant capital costs on specialized GPU memory that would just sit idle most of the year.
It is a masterpiece of capital efficiency for industrial deployments.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And the second use case detailed in the documents is even more intense, the Privada Panopticon security system.
Yes, the Vault Warden system. Imagine a high-security freeport storing fine art or a sensitive logistics gallery.
The system needs to process 10 simultaneous 4K uncompressed video streams to run what they call optical pigment authentication.
They are literally using AI vision models to analyze the spectral signature of art or assets in real time to detect forgeries or tampering.
Processing 10 4K streams simultaneously creates a massive sudden memory spike.
Using a Cove cluster, a master node can dynamically borrow RAM from sleeping or low-priority nodes in the building. The absolute instant a security lockdown or audit event is triggered.
It processes the heavy 4K streams in real time without dropping a single frame, authenticates the assets, and then releases the RAM back.
It's resource allocation at the speed of light.
You have a building full of computers acting as one giant fluid brain, shifting its capacity exactly where the crisis is happening.
And DeRticular is taking this a step further commercially with a strategy they call the memory tower.
They plan to white label a smaller, optimized version of Cove's 4U rack cluster and sell it as the centralized sovereign core.
It acts as the mothership for a farm, a logistics hub, or an industrial site.
This architecture creates perfect ecosystem harmony across the deployment.
You have the cheap, low-power, low-memory edge nodes, the Intel N100s, handling the light, localized traffic on the perimeter.
Like opening the RV gate, authenticating a shared payment token, or reading a water meter.
But when a heavy, computationally intense job arrives on the local network.
Like recompiling the complex, decentralized Locutus ledger or training a new OpenClaw AI model.
The edge node doesn't panic and crash. It seamlessly kicks the heavy job up the chain to the sovereign core.
And the sovereign core instantly pulls together 512 gigabytes or a terabyte of liquid RAM across its blades, crushes the complex task, and sends the simple binary result back down to the edge node to execute.
It's a localized, unbreakable loop.
If we connect this to the broader technological landscape we've been discussing, Cove is the heavy industry partner that mathematically proves localized, off-grid infrastructure can genuinely rival Amazon Web Services in sheer performance.
Without needing the physical wire connecting it to the cloud, you achieve hyperscale cloud performance, completely disconnected from the fragile macro grid.
It really changes how you view a server rack. It's not a collection of individual isolated computers trapped in metal boxes anymore. It's an organism.
It's a fluid entity that shares resources instantly based on the immediate needs of the environment.
So let's pull all these massive concepts together and recap this incredible journey.
We've covered a lot.
We started deeply in the software layer, the paradigm shift of AI agents replacing humans in the shopping cart.
Executing high-intent, mathematically precise purchases through agentic commerce.
Completely bypassing traditional marketing funnels. We explored the specialized machine trust stack, the sub-second financial rails.
Know your agent cryptography, trusted execution environments, and stablecoin micropayments.
Making it secure enough for machines to hold real financial value. And finally, we discovered how liquid software-defined memory via Cove SDM allows these heavy AI brains to actually operate on physical hardware in the middle of nowhere.
Opening gates and processing 4K security video without crashing from the physical limits of motherboard RAM.
It is a complete end-to-end vertical stack, moving from the autonomous digital decision down to the localized kinetic physical execution.
And I want to leave you with a final, somewhat mind-bending thought to mull over regarding the convergence of these two massive trends we've discussed
I
today.
love a good mind bender.
We know that AI agents are now capable of executing sub-cent microtransactions using protocols like PI-402.
Right.
And we now know that Cove SDM allows physical servers to dynamically borrow RAM from one another across a network data plane. So the inevitable question becomes, how long until these servers start using agentic commerce protocols to autonomously rent memory from each other by the nanosecond, negotiating the price based on network demand and settling the payments in stablecoins entirely on their own with zero human oversight?
Wow.